Hey, it's me, Lars Larson. Thanks for checking out my podcast, and be sure to tell a friend about the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to Tuesday on the Radio Northwest Network. I've got a question for you. Are major American cities here in the Pacific Northwest ready to give up, on the public services that we get, critical life-saving services like police, like paramedics, like firefighters? We are coming to that point in the month of October where it's going to be push comes to shove. Now, I'm going to give you both a negative example, one where Seattle, as an example, is ready to lose one-third of its already diminished police force. One-third of the cops, almost, are going to be let go simply because they won't take the jab. And then, later on this hour, I'm going to introduce you to one Northwest school district. This one happens to be in Oregon, where the school district has said, the pandemic, yeah, we're dealing with it. We're providing the service that the taxpayers have paid to have us provide. We're going to stay in operation, and they have. We're going to provide at-home schooling where needed and where desired by parents and students. And we're going to keep our classrooms open. And the jab? Yes, we will honor the religious exemptions the way a lot of public institutions, both government institutions and privately owned institutions, in most cases medical facilities, have simply said, oh, you want a religious exemption? You think you have that right under civil rights laws passed by the federal and the state government? Well, you're not going to get it. Or we're going to say yes to the exemption, but then we're going to say, and then we're going to fire you for even asking for it. Now, if some of you are not outraged already about this, I think you ought to be. Because unlike most of the topics I've talked about on this show for almost 25 years, I mean, we bring up topics from time to time, and most of them do not involve every single last one of us. But this one does, because it cuts to the heart of law enforcement. It cuts to the heart of medical care. It cuts to the heart of the government services that here in Oregon and Washington and Idaho, we pay way too much in taxes, and we don't get the kind of service that we're entitled to. And I say entitled to, you're a citizen of the United States. That government agency derives its power to be a government agency from your consent, and it gets its entire budget from your pocket, and it says, we will provide you services. And then when they don't, they say, oh, sorry, you still have to pay, but you're not going to get the services that you paid for. When people do that in the private sector, it's called fraud, and people go to jail for it. When people do it in government, they just say, tough luck. Shut up, work your job, and pay your taxes. And by the way, for those not working, we'll send you a check and food stamps and subsidize this and that. And by the way, a little bit later on this hour, I'm going to tell you about somebody who's running for a major office here in the Northwest, and she's bankrupt. And she's living in subsidized housing, but she wants to be in charge of a multi-million dollar budget for a government agency that, like some of them, is absolutely essential to maintaining what's going on. I'm going to leave the name off of this one. But before I get to talking about the Seattle cops, I got an email, and I'm going to leave the lady's name off at her request. My daughter is a nurse in Eugene and Springfield. She hasn't got the vax for religious reasons. Her exemption was approved, but she will be on unpaid leave starting next Tuesday. She just heard the Department of Justice has declared that nurses not getting the vaccine are breaking the law. And so the Oregon State Board of Nursing is meeting to decide whether they are going to start revoking the licenses of nurses not getting the vaccine. This mom writes, not only do they want to punish healthcare workers for not complying with this illegal mandate by taking their jobs, they want to stop them from working as a nurse at all. This is beyond my comprehension. I know you've spoken to other people about losing their jobs because of not complying, but taking away their chance to do their job somewhere else has got to be wrong. Moving out of the state is looking better all the time. Now, I know that to the elites out there, they say, fine, we don't want you anyway, because they have a perception about people who want to make their own medical decisions. They say, those people are just crazy, and they're uneducated. I want to point something out to you, and this seems fairly obvious to me, but I know the meme that the Biden administration went with about June of this year, because Joe Biden came into office, and he said, listen, there wasn't even a vaccine program when I got into office, even though about 20 million Americans had already been vaccinated. Joe himself had been vaccinated, but Joe's getting old, maybe just didn't remember getting shot not once but twice, a shot in December and a shot in January, and yet he comes in and just tells a lie. Because Joe Biden, I need to remind you, has been telling lies his entire career. He was a plagiarist and a liar in college. He's been a liar as a politician. He has stolen other people's speeches. He's stolen other people's life stories and adopted them as his own. He has claimed educational accomplishments that were very easy to debunk. But you see, most of the big media, they like Joe. They like the Democrats. They say, well, let's not call him out. We called out Trump for lies for 4 years. Let's not do it with Joe, because otherwise we're going to have to assign two or three people full time to just calling out all the lies. So he just lies. He just says, oh, this is true. It's not. It doesn't matter. But I reminded you yesterday, Joe Biden announced 1 month and 3 days ago, we're going to have a federal mandate. It's going to come down through OSHA. It's going to say that every single employee of every single private company in America that has more than 100 people on the staff is going to have to mandate vaccination for everyone. He announced it a month and 3 days ago. The rule does not exist today. I'm going to suggest to you, I don't think the rule is ever going to exist, because what happens? Yes, OSHA can adopt rules like that. They've adopted about 10 rules like that in the last 50 years through the federal, you know, rules and regs, you know, their regulation policies and regulation practice. When they do it, sometimes they get challenged. In the last six that got challenged, five of them were thrown out. And Joe Biden knows that. And he knows that the minute he actually puts that rule that he lied about a month ago and said, the rule is being written. The rule is not being written. Nobody has written a rule at OSHA. And I'm just telling you, that's just a hard and fast given fact. And why aren't they writing it? Because the minute they write it, it's going to be taken to court. And in all likelihood, the courts will have to throw it out because it doesn't meet what the law requires. So he said, we'll make up the rule. We'll tell America it's already on the way, and they'll all believe it. And so far, they're right. By the way, The Urbanist reports the Seattle Police Department reported as of yesterday, 292 sworn officers have yet to submit their proof of vaccination. That is about one third of the entire police department. And remember, the Seattle Police Department was already undersized when the pandemic arrived. It got shut down further after George Floyd's death and the mobs in the streets demanded defunding, just like Portland decided to downsize its police department. Violent crime has gone up dramatically. People are getting killed. People are getting hurt. And now we're looking at major police departments here in the Northwest losing major chunks of their staff. I'm going to ask you the question in the Twitter poll. Would you rather have a vaccine mandate enforced or government services delivered? Very simple. It's not a yes, no. Do you want the mandate enforced or do you want government services delivered? I'm going to go with government services delivered. Today's Twitter poll brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for your business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Coming up, what explains all the fakes we're seeing in our government? I'll give you a list of them. Details in the Northwest nonsense coming up next.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
I would imagine that we've all heard the advice, fake it till you make it. We may even know a few people who did it that way. But consider the fakes we're seeing lately and the real damage they do. A fake OSHA vax regulation announced by the president more than a month ago that still literally doesn't exist today gets people fired by the thousands, maybe even the tens of thousands. 2 weeks ago, the Secretary of Homeland Security for America told reporters, the border is closed. The border is secure, as literally hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens flooded in. Yeah, Mayorkas says, don't believe your lying eyes. Oregon's governor signed a law that lets high schools issue fake diplomas to kids who can't read, write, or count. And when Joe Biden wanted the media to video his latest COVID booster shot, he used a fake Oval Office constructed in the Eisenhower Executive Building next door to the real White House. Can't even understand the reason for that. He's got the Oval Office, doesn't he? Or is Obama sitting in there now? Now we've learned that that strange cackling laugh is not the only fake thing about Kamala Harris. World Space Week last week featured a video purporting to show the vice president surrounded by young school children sitting in rapt attention, fascinated by what Harris was saying about the wonders of science and space. Only it turns out, and I kid you not, the kids are fake too. By that I mean they are child actors flown into the Washington, D.C. Capitol to play the role of fascinated school kids listening to Kamala Harris. I don't suppose Kamala could have actually gone to an actual Washington, D.C. classroom and talked to actual kids and heard what they actually had to say. No, you got to hire actors and actresses, young ones, and say, here, you're going to pretend to be interested in what the vice president has to say. And when we're all done, there's a good paycheck attached to it. By the way, the video production company, which did Kamala's fake, is in real life called, and I'm not kidding, Sinking Ship Entertainment. Make of that what you will. On Facebook today, Tom Brobst writes in, says, God bless America, Lars. I often listen to your show. Yesterday, you said there was no written law for the vaccine mandate. I've looked online. There is an executive order that the Biden administration enacted July of 21 for federal employees and companies. My company is following the executive order and will be terminating employees on December 8, 2021. Can you please help me understand your research and not being able to challenge the mandate as it's unwritten? Tom Brobst, God bless America. Tom, here's the explanation. I specifically said the mandate announced on September 9th by President Joe Biden that, as he said, covered every single private business in America with 100 employees or more. I'm not talking about his order to federal employees. He may be able to get away with that legally, and that one is written down on paper. But what Joe Biden announced on September the 9th was an OSHA regulation. It's called an emergency, ETS is the acronym for it in the federal government. Now, in theory, when Joe Biden announced it, he said the rule is being written. Well, that was 1 month and 3 days ago. And so far, no such rule has been written. No draft of the rule has been written. He simply faked it. And at this point, the White House won't even give an ETA for the ETS. In other words, what's the estimated time of arrival of this mythical rule? Because until that happens, as I explained earlier this week, 27 attorneys general who work on behalf of 27 sensible red states in America are ready to go to court and challenge the rule. The problem is, in the American judicial system, you can't challenge a rule that doesn't yet exist. And the Biden administration knows this. The minute they write it down on a piece of paper, attorneys general, 27 of them, the majority of America's states, can take it to court and say, this ain't legal. And I've reminded you that the history of this is that they've done this 10 times at OSHA. And of those 10 times, six were challenged and five of those the courts threw out. And Biden knows he's likely to get thrown out of court. He may have remembered that from law school. He did go to law school a long, long time ago, although he didn't get the grades he always claims that he got. But hey, he's been lying to America for a long time. He gets away with it. If your kids lie to you and they get away with it, don't they just keep on lying? Well, Joe Biden does the same thing. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing the right thing matters.
There are a lot of reasons not to want Nicole Thomas Kennedy, who is currently running for Seattle City Attorney, to become the Seattle City Attorney. And the reason is Pete Holmes has done a very bad job at City Attorney, but he's not doing that well in the polls, and he didn't do that well in the latest election. If Nicole Thomas Kennedy becomes City Attorney, she's going to be a friend to Antifa, just like Mike Schmidt has been in Multnomah County in the state of Oregon. But there's a new reason. I didn't even know this, but the folks over at the Post-Millennial, that's Andy Ngo's publication, have pointed out the Antifa-supporting candidate for Seattle City Attorney, Nicole Thomas Kennedy, who's campaigning to oversee a $35 million city office that decides the prosecution of all misdemeanors in the city of Seattle, has herself declared bankruptcy, has a massive amount of debt, and lives in subsidized housing. Now, ordinarily, that would be her personal business, but she's running for a public office. Is it worth asking why it was that in 2019, Before the pandemic, she filed a bankruptcy petition to clear almost $500,000 in personal debt, most of it student loans. She also has 13 collection agencies chasing her for debts and has had a series of parking tickets, which, by the way, got discharged in the bankruptcy. So, question is, would you trust somebody who can't manage her own affairs to manage a $35 million city office that is so critical to law enforcement in the city of Seattle? I would not, but I'm not a Seattle voter. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by River City Environmental, the leading environmental and emergency services company in the Northwest, which is now hiring with full benefits, leading pay, and a signing bonus online, rivercityusa.com/careers. Sean Bird writes in, Lars, I'm a truck driver. I drive from Umatilla to Mountain Home, Idaho, and back every day. I listen every day on the iHeartRadio app. So I get informed by you on both your shows. I've been thinking about how the medical profession in particular is firing the heroes who've saved countless lives due to their willingness to work with the China virus since it began. Since they chose not to get the vaccine, they're now losing their jobs, their livelihoods, and their dignity. If one of my family members dies because of a hospital that is understaffed due to lack of personnel, I'm filing a lawsuit against that hospital. It's disgusting that the medical care profession is doing this to our country when there is absolutely no reason to do it. Signed sincerely, Sean Bird. Sean, thanks very much. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you want to jump into the best conversation, don't forget, naysayers go to the head of the line at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. All your emails come to me, talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can vote in our Twitter poll, @LarsLarsonShow, or on the website at LarsLarson.com. Should schools stop firing teachers and honor religious exemptions from the vaccine mandate? Coming up, the chair of one of the few Northwest school districts to stay in operation during most of the pandemic. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I started off with a Twitter poll today asking you, would you rather have government services delivered or a vaccine mandate enforced? Well, the folks in Crook County have elected some sensible people to their school board, and the chair of the school board, Scott Cooper, joins me now. Chair Cooper, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Lars. Good to be here.
I want you to first tell my audience how your school district differs from so many of the other school districts around the Northwest in the way it has provided services over, the last 18 months.
Well, I'm not sure we differ from other school districts in that we're all in a mess, and we're all doing our best to try and navigate through some really treacherous times with some really difficult oversight. But we have committed that our number one goal is to try and keep our kids in school and in person, that we saw the devastating effects on mental health of the pandemic, and we don't want to repeat that. So some of the things that we did were straight out of the box. We were the first district, I think, in the state to get to virtual education. So we had our, you know, continuing work on our foundational skills. And then we were one of the first districts in Oregon to reopen for in-person learning last year. First, we opened on a hybrid basis. And by, you know, the middle of the winter, we were back into full-time, full-person, and we managed to maintain that. And we're really proud of that.
Well, I think you should be. You've stayed open while other districts were closed down, and you did it by simply saying we're going to manage this. We're going to deal with the effects of both the pandemic and the vaccine and everything else. Now you've got the challenge that the governor says, I want everybody vaccinated, and if they're not vaccinated, we're seeing doctors, nurses, airline pilots, cops, paramedics, and the like. I mean, a lot of really skilled people being fired. Or being told you're on unpaid leave, yes, we'll honor your religious exemption, but you will be on the staff, but you won't be getting a paycheck and you won't be assigned any work. So effectively firing people, is that the way Crook County Schools handled it?
Well, that hasn't been our story. We saw data at our school board meeting last night about the vaccination status of our staff. We started with 511 that we had to work through, and we ended up with exactly no teachers being fired. And we've got six substitutes who have decided not to come back under those circumstances. And then 21 coaches who haven't yet gotten vaccinated, mostly because their seasons haven't started, and so they don't really have any urgency there. So for the most part, we got 100% vaccination rate on our staff. We were fairly generous with both with the exemption approach and with working with people around their situations, and that does seem to have worked for us.
Now, I know you want to watch out for people's privacy, and I totally respect that. KTVZ, and I'll give credit where it's due to my colleagues in journalism, they say 100 of the employees at Kirk County Schools have received medical or religious exemptions. Without being specific, is that a fair estimation of the number who've received an exemption or an exception?
That's actually too low.
It's too low.
We have 110 religious exemptions and 6 medical exceptions.
Okay, now you've seen what other districts and other institutions, healthcare institutions in particular, have done. They've said, we'll give you the exception, but you're not going to be scheduled for work and don't expect a paycheck. That's not what you've done.
No, I think that's overkill. I mean, we're here to get kids educated, and so, you know, we need to protect the kids and we need to protect the staff, and, you know, so reasonable people can sit down and figure out how to do that.
And you've managed to do it. Have you had any problems as a district by approaching it that way?
Well, we've had, you know, the usual uproar. When you're messing around in people's lives and employment, they get upset. But, you know, you have conversation, you have discussion, you say what will work for all of us to keep this thing moving forward. You are respectful of the fact that not everybody agrees in this environment, and you listen carefully to what people are telling you while you keep this focus on the message that we've got rules and we got to follow them.
Okay. I have to admit, I mean, Scott, I always try and tell my audience if I have a dog in the fight, my only dog in the fight is I've gone to the rodeo a few times in Crook County, and I've occasionally taken a buck deer out of Crook County. But other than that, I've got no real connections there, and I'll be happy to go back and take another one if you want me to. Tell me this, from a distance, when you see the way that other institutions are doing this, saying, we're going to grant the exceptions, but we're really not going to, we're going to fire all these people, have you had any pushback from your community, from the citizens who that you answer to, saying, you ought to just fire those people if they won't get the shot?
We have not had that kind of pushback. We've had some pushback from people saying that, you know, we need to just ignore the mandates altogether and do whatever we want to do, and which would be very, very risky for us as an agency. We are generally, though, of the opinion that this is way beyond community discussion. Our whole approach in this state of mandating is in error. Mandates don't work. Education and instruction and cooperation works. I've seen that in other states. I've had the opportunity to travel since June. And going out there, you know, people tell people, this is what you should do. Here's some good reasons you should do it. And then they do it.
So, or they, you know, don't, but they're respected when they decide not to, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, just giving people opportunities to be educated and make choices is a much better strategy. I think we all realize that now. I hope we all realize that now.
Well, I don't know. I started out the show today, Scott, by telling folks that about a third of Seattle's police department is right on the verge of getting fired because their exemptions will not be honored, and they're going to get fired by the city in a city that's already short of cops, and Portland is in much the same boat. What do you think of that as a leader in your community?
I hadn't been to Portland since before the pandemic, until last weekend. I don't think Portland is a good example of good government happening in Oregon right now. That's what I think.
And you could probably tell that from the freeway, couldn't you?
I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked coming into Portland by the graffiti, by the trash, by the situation downtown. I've always loved Portland as a city, but this Portland I don't recognize.
No, I don't either, and believe me, I've been here for decades. Any other thoughts about how schools could be run better? Because I told you that I openly admire Crook County's example, but I also said I'd like to see other people say, well, they're doing it that way and it's working out okay. Maybe we should do it that way and inspire by example. Is that the way we should do it? I mean,
Well, I'll tell you just a few more pieces of data that I think demonstrate that the approach we're taking, which is to stay focused on our four big four, instruction, construction, money, and people, our result working for us. We just got our new state report card. We are on 91% on-time graduation, which is 8% above the state average, 95% five-year completion, which is 8% above the state average, and 95% of freshmen are on track to graduate, which is 21% above the state average, and our enrollment is up 5%. And one of the most important things we're doing is we found a constructive way to work with homeschool parents. So we've got over 250 kids enrolled in our district-sponsored homeschool program, which provides auxiliary supports to homeschool parents so that they can successfully educate their kids. Again, parent choice in action.
So, Mr. Cooper, any chance that Kate Brown is considering you for the post of state school superintendent?
No chance whatsoever.
Would you take the job if offered it?
Well, would you change the party of the governor? There you go.
In a heartbeat if I could do it, but you're asking for magic I can't do on the radio. Crook County School Board Chair Scott Cooper. Mr. Cooper, it's a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Take care now. Now, I want to know, will you go to your school board and say, can we run things the way they're running it and get above average results and have the schools actually deliver the services they're supposed to deliver? That, and we're going to talk about Southwest Airlines. Its CEO blames Joe Biden for the vaccine mandate. And we've got a little treat for you, too, coming up on the Radio Northwest Network.
Can't fly with you, Southwest, shame on you. Staffs burned the vax, feared they'd get the axe, so they came down with blue flu. Your cover story, we know it's not true. Passengers were stranded as 2,000 flights were scrapped. While they were trapped, you put out crap. It was forcing vaccinations. That's the reason you shut down. Get out of town with that lame claim of bad weather. PR-wise, it's such a real disgrace. Hey, Southwest, nice try. Got caught in a lie. Yes, it's blown up in your face. I'm stuck here at the airport as they ground my flight. Can't fly with you. I'll be sleeping here tonight.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network. The great Jim Gossett, the parody artist for the Radio Northwest Network and this program. Glad to be with you on a Tuesday and always glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And by the way, speaking of Southwest Airlines, I've always enjoyed my flights on Southwest, but apparently the company has changed dramatically during the pandemic because they took seriously an order from the president based on a lie. To say, I've already written the rule, it's OSHA, you got to do it if you got more than 100 employees. Turns out, not true, doesn't exist yet, will go to court, probably get thrown out, but Joe Biden is holding them up from going to court because you can't go to court and challenge a rule that hasn't been written yet. And yet Southwest Airlines CEO Gary Kelly blames Biden for the airline's decision to go the route of a COVID vaccine mandate for its staff. He says, arguing that new rules for federal contractors put them in a bind. The federal contractor rules date back to September 9th. But Kelly's answer was given in the context of a new Texas order from Governor Greg Abbott that bans COVID vaccine mandates by employers in the state. And Southwest Airlines is both a federal contractor and based in Dallas, Texas. He says, I've never been in favor of corporations imposing that kind of mandate. I'm not in favor of that, never have been, but the executive order from President Biden mandates all federal employees and all federal contractors, which covers all major airlines, have to have a vaccine mandate in place by December 8th, so we're working through with that. Now to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Listening on the Radio Northwest Network at the Crooked River Ranch, Jay, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. I was on the Deschutes County Facebook page and got a discussion with your administrator. And I said, she says, you know, there's a 90% the vaccine is 90% that you won't get the vaccine or won't get the virus. And I was like, well, you think it puts a bubble around you or what? And she's like, well, it's 90% that you won't get sick. And I was like, you know, you still breathe. It's 90% or whatever that percentage is that you won't die. And so she's getting an argument with me that it's 90% effective that you won't get it. I was like, apparently you don't understand how this whole thing works.
No, she doesn't.
No matter what vaccine you took, you still breathe it in. It doesn't go around you because you have the vaccine. Anyway, I got banned for 30 days from Facebook.
For that? Well, and Jay, you've gotten in. This is where that whole thing gets kind of thorny because people say, well, you have to get the vaccine. Why? Does it keep you from getting it? Well, not necessarily. Does it keep you from dying of it? Not necessarily. And I keep pointing out, in the month of July, 18% of the deaths in the state of Oregon, according to the Oregon Health Authority, were among vaccinated people. And they said, well, those are probably older people. I said, well, isn't that the very crowd we've been trying to protect the most since the very beginning of this? So if the vaccine still allows 18%. What's that?
Go ahead, Ars.
No, I'm just saying if you can still get it and you can still give it to somebody else and you can still die from it, and they say, but it's 90% effective. And I said, well, you know, the question I'd ask him, Jay, because I find questions are the best way to get to the truth. You say, what's my chance of dying from COVID at all? And if they're honest and they know the numbers, they'll say it's 0.3%. You say, so what does the vaccine do? Well, it makes it less likely. Well, less likely than 0.3? Oh, no. Like she told you, 90% effective. And you say, well, just getting COVID, either alpha or delta variant, leaves you with a 0.3% chance of dying from it, a few percentage chance of going to the hospital and suffering a tough illness, and a very big chance of having an asymptomatic case. So how does that change if you tell me it's 90% effective? At what? It's already a 99.7 disease right now.
Well, and you just proved my point because I was hanging out with some guys that were all vaccinated this weekend when we were pheasant hunting, and they're like, and they kind of had the same argument. And I said, you know, you guys don't wear masks and you walk around, we're with all these people. I'm like, you don't understand that you can spread it just as easy. I mean, maybe not. I don't know what that number is, but maybe not quite as easy, but who knows that number. But I mean, you're walking around and you're not taking your 6 feet. You're not wearing your mask. I mean, who's more of a problem here?
Yeah, and that's the question a lot of us have been asking. And then the question of, would you rather have government services you already paid for or a vaccine mandate enforced? Welcome back to Lars Larson Show. It's a Tuesday, and it's a pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network, which has supplied honestly provocative talk to the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for over 21 years. Next year, it'll be 22. Our Twitter poll today, would you rather have a vaccine mandate enforced or government services delivered? I'll go with government services delivered. After all, we've already paid for it. To pay for it and not get it seems especially stupid. To have the governments themselves sabotage their own ability to deliver. And you know what I mean by that. Seattle on the verge of firing a third of all their cops over the vaccine mandate. Hospitals that have fired hundreds and hundreds of doctors and nurses. Other public agencies, too many to actually enumerate today. But speaking of government, I want to talk to Joel Matilla about something that comes up occasionally in communities as they begin looking at charter review. Now, before your eyes glaze over, Joel and I have gone back and forth on email about this. He is chair of the Clark County Republican Party. And Joel, we have to tell people why this matters to them. And am I wrong in comparing a county charter with, say, the U.S. Constitution that provides the bedrock for how the government does its job? And the charter is the local version of that, but can only be built within all the constraints of the state constitution and the federal constitution. Why should this matter to people?
Actually, Lars, and thank you for having me on the air and to talk about this important issue. You're absolutely right. That's a very good comparison. The county charter is very much like the U.S. Constitution. It would be like our county constitution. In short, so we had freeholders elected last year. They've been meeting and putting together these proposals. They proposed 7 amendments to the Clark County Charter, And I'm going to make it real easy for you and our listeners. I'm recommending a no vote on amendments 1 through 7 and a yes vote on 8 and 9.
So tell me about why one's, let's make it as simple for people. Why a no vote on those first 7? What are they talking about wanting to change the county charter in, and how would it affect the citizens of that county, of any county? Because other counties do this from time to time. Tell me why they should say no to 1 through 7.
That's right. Okay, really quickly. So in your introduction, you have the voice of President Trump saying that we might not have a country left. If amendments 1 through 7 get passed, we might not have a county left. Essentially, amendments 1 and 2, they want to make all the countywide offices and the councilor offices nonpartisan. So they want us to go to our ballots and not have complete information on where these office seekers, where they might lean on issues. That's Amendment 1 and 2. Amendment 3 is just a blatant attempt by these freeholders to gerrymander the districts. They want to create 3 extremely liberal districts in Clark County, councilor districts. They want to have 1 district that's, maybe a little bit purple, but actually does lean blue, and then only 1 conservative district in North County. So they're trying to gerrymander the whole county and just have liberal. We'll lose Clark County forever if number 3 gets passed.
Because what they want to do is, if they can control who gets elected to those spots, they control not only the agenda, but the outcome of any votes on important issues.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And another thing they want to do is, right now, this is another thing Amendment 3 does, is currently right now, the whole county gets to vote to elect our county council chair. Another thing they want to do in changing an Amendment 3 is have the 5 councilors elect or vote themselves a chair out of those 5.
So they get the choice.
And
Joel, am I right in guessing the county the chair is going to decide a lot about what gets on the agenda and what does not get on the agenda?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. The county chair has broad powers, just like what you just said. And moving on to amendment number 4, what they want to do is, right now we have it so we amend the charter every 10 years. Amendment 4 would change it to every 5 years. So can you imagine, I mean, in your introduction, you talked about comparing the charter to the Constitution. Can you imagine taking a look and changing the United States Constitution every 5 years?
No.
It would be ridiculous on its face.
No, in fact, you and I both know, the design of the U.S. Constitution is to make it extraordinarily hard to amend the Constitution. You can do it if there is a lot of popular support, because you've got to get extraordinary majorities in the Congress, and then you have to have 3/5 of the states sign off on it and say it's okay. Otherwise, it doesn't happen, which is why we only have a couple of dozen U.S. federal constitutional amendments.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And moving on, Lars, to amendments, Amendment 5, it creates an ethics review board. You know, we already have ethics review boards and such laws written in Washington state law. We don't need another level of government. Amendment 6 is basically affirmative action, which is unconstitutional in Washington state.
Hold on. When you say it's affirmative action, what do they say? That you have to hire people or fire people based on their skin color, race, ethnicity, et cetera?
That's right. All that and more. And it creates a whole additional department that the taxpayers would have to pay for. You know, 5 times the citizens of Washington state have rejected affirmative action. And this Amendment 6 wants to enshrine it in county policy or actually county law here. Moving on to Amendment 7, it basically creates a sanctuary county here in Clark County, and as you know, and as you've talked about so much on your show, we don't need any more sanctuary counties.
No, this would mandate illegal aliens be protected with some kind of special protection in Clark County?
That's exactly what it would do. It would protect illegal aliens.
Okay, let's go very quickly. The ones you'd like to see passed. Tell my audience what they would be.
Very well, thank you. Yeah, Amendment 8 is some minor wording corrections and with timelines and stuff like that. Both Amendments 8 and 9 were passed unanimously by the council. And so there's broad support for them. That's Amendment 8 as some minor corrections. Amendment 9 is the big one. What Amendment 9 does is it specifically speaks to unincorporated Clark County. So the citizens of unincorporated Clark County get to vote, and only they get to vote on policies that would affect only them. So for example, you don't have the city of Vancouver, voting to say ban fireworks for all of Clark County. The citizens of rural Clark County would be able to vote for themselves on a ban or not a ban.
I think that makes sense. That's Joel Matilla, who's chair of the Clark County Republican Party. Joel, thanks very much. We're going to follow this one closely. Coming up is the region's biggest power producer, Vax, mandating itself into blackouts. We'll get to that next and your calls. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Tuesday, live all over the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Do you know, you folks give me a great opportunity when we reach out to somebody and say, why don't you come on the show and talk about your issue? We reach out to liberals every day. And they say, oh, no, I don't want to talk about that. And I said, well, why not? Don't you want to tell people what it is you have in mind? No, we really don't want to admit what it is we have in mind for people. That kind of cowardice should tell you a lot about somebody's position on any issue. You would think that everybody who is in a position to say, I've got a great idea for how to run people's lives, you say, great, come on and tell the people about it. No, we want to keep it quiet till it's a done deal. You know, that should immediately make you want to say, no, I'm not going to take part. So, today's Twitter poll, would you rather have a vaccine mandate strictly enforced? No exceptions. This is the way most of the government agencies in the Northwest are handling it. Or would you rather have government services actually delivered? And if you say, well, I'd like to have both. No, you don't get both. Because if you strictly enforce the vaccine mandate, Seattle is on the verge of getting rid of a third of its cops in a city that's already under-policed. The city of Portland is doing the same kind of thing. You've seen major healthcare institutions in the Northwest say, we're going to get rid of a whole bunch of doctors and nurses, and then we're going to turn around and tell the public, I'm sorry, we can't provide the service that we normally do to the community we're in because we don't have enough staff. Well, what did you do with them? Well, we asked them to take a vaccine, and then when they said no, we fired them. Oh, well, then there's your problem. Go back and undo it. Oh, and by the way, does it actually exist? Now, if we're talking about the federal mandates on federal employees, yeah, the president has the authority to tell federal employees what to do. But now he's imposed it on federal private companies that do a lot of business with the federal government. And on September the 9th, he announced that mandate would extend to all private companies that employ more than 100 people. And you say, well, where's the rule? You say, we haven't written it yet. Just obey the rule and we'll write it later. And once they write it, it's going to be taken to court. And the history of OSHA regulations like that, as I pointed out to you yesterday, is that when they're challenged in court, about 80 to 90% of the time, the courts throw them out as illegal or unconstitutional or both. So you can understand why Joe Biden says, I want to have a rule, but I don't want to actually put it on paper yet. I just want everybody to comply with the rule. So if you're working for a private company, the ones, as I said, that are contractors for the federal government has some sway over that. But if you're working for an entirely private company that has more than 100 employees, and your boss says, we have to follow this rule that Joe rolled out on September 9th. If you say to your boss, hey, can I see a copy of that rule, the rule that you are following to the T? And your boss says, well, it's the rule. It's the one he sent the press release out about. It's the one he made the statement on national television about. Yes, but where is it? Well, it doesn't exist yet. So you're following a rule, and the rule hasn't been written yet? Can you explain to me exactly how that works, please? So, would you rather have a vaccine mandate strictly enforced or government services actually delivered? I'd go for delivered instead. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day on the Radio Northwest Network at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Yesterday's poll had to do with a brand new law signed into effect in California. And I always worry when crazy California passes a law that Jay Inslee and Kate Brown and the Oregon and Washington legislature can't be far behind. Should the government mandate a gender-neutral toy aisle for the kids? And if your first reaction is, why is the government getting involved in what kind of toys Walmart or Kmart or Freddy's or any other store puts on the shelves? Why is that a government thing? And I would agree with you. It shouldn't be a government mandate. I don't think the government should have anything to say about what kind of toys. I mean, unless they're dangerous toys or unless they're somehow, let's say, obscene or profane. Okay, maybe the government can get involved in that. But a gender-neutral toy aisle for all your kids? Listen, if you're a parent who wants to bring your kid up as no gender at all, not male, not female, you know, you dress them, don't dress them in pink, don't dress them in blue, don't let little girls play with boys' toys, don't let boys play with boys' toys or girls' toys, and, you know, back and forth that way. You want to do that? Go for it. It's your decision. You know, the damage you're doing is to your kids, and I guess, well, your parents and the government hasn't taken away your rights as parents yet, although they're well on the way, I'm sure that they'll be happy to let you ruin your kids all you want. Teach the little girls they're not really little girls, and they'll be able to choose later to be little boys or vice versa. If that's your approach, there's nothing I can do or say about it. You are their parents. But later on, when the real world explains to those kids as they become adults, I know your kid, your mom and dad raised you without any respect to gender, but out here in the real world, we actually understand there are two genders, just two of them. Well, when I put that up for a vote, 96% of you joined me in voting no to the idea of a government mandate like California's for a gender-neutral toy aisle for the kiddos. Only 4% of you said yes. And, you know, those are exactly the naysayers I'd love to hear from, but we usually don't hear from them. And why? Because most people who subscribe to that kind of nonsense, they don't want to actually have somebody ask them, why do you believe in this kind of stuff? Now, I want to share something with you. I get a lot of emails from people. Many times they say, look, I'm going to lose my job if you say who wrote this. So I won't say who wrote it, but it's very clear who it came from. Somebody who works for the Bonneville Power Administration. Lars, keep this anonymous as I'm a current employee. I don't want my name out there. You know, I know you don't have the greatest sympathy for federal workers in general. Actually, I do. I don't have any sympathy for agencies that spend the people's money and don't deliver anything of value. So apply that as you will to federal employees. There are lots of federal employees I have plenty of respect for. The FBI is on my dirt list these days, but that's another story for another day. But he writes, the greatest threat to the Pacific Northwest energy supply is not the impending shutdown of coal and gas-fired generation plants, but rather the COVID vaccine mandate for federal employees and contractors. And I'm going to ask my executive producer, Donovan Sargent, to reach out to BPA and say, will you come on and address this? Bonneville Power Administration, the emailer writes, which operates under the Department of Energy, delivers electricity through Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, California, and Canada. They transmit power to nearly every utility in the Northwest, and they provide 3,000 megawatts of electricity directly to Los Angeles. BPA is preparing to fire, he says, 40% of its total workforce who don't take the jab. This includes the linemen who construct and fix the power lines, system dispatchers that operate and manage the grid 24/7, electricians who build and maintain the substation equipment, and the substation operators who actually throw the switch to turn your power back on. Also include are all the staff behind the scenes that ensure energy gets to your home. A reduction in these personnel, already understaffed, will undoubtedly lead to increased response times to power outages, prolonged blackouts, overworked and exhausted employees that, if they don't do their work correctly, can kill people. Going into a Pacific Northwest winter, this is a dangerous place to be. So I'm going to ask BPA to come on and actually either refute that or confirm it and tell us why. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I began today by pointing out that major cities are getting ready to shed many of their top professionals in their police departments. In some cases, Seattle was the example I used, more than a third of the cops may be let go because they won't go along with the vaccine mandate. So cities that are already short on cops got shorter still a year ago when their cities voted to do partial defunding are now going to not fully, but they're going to take a lot more people off the payroll. I thought we'd talk about that with Lance LaRusso, who's an attorney, a former cop, and the author of the books When Cops Kill and Blue News. Lance, welcome back to the show. And this sounds like this is almost a nationwide phenomena that's happening of cities deciding to depolice and then ending up with consequences that mean death and injury for a lot of their citizens.
You know, the consequences are just starting to get dire. I mean, the amount of the response time, the amount of increase in response times is really getting severe in some places. In some places, they're prioritizing calls and just not sending police unless it's an actual life or death or potential life and death situation. And, you know, the vaccines have become politicized. They're very much in the news. And whether people want to get them or not, law enforcement officers, 710 have died from COVID. So they feel it very, very dearly and very personally. And to further say that you've been operating with the mask and with personal protective equipment, and you've been doing everything we told you, but now since you don't want to get the vaccine, we're going to fire you. I just don't know that that's a good governing decision, especially when you're dealing with a situation where the individuals that are protecting us are now getting less and less, and the officers are ending up in situations that are completely unprotected. The officers are wearing their PPE, but they respond to a domestic dispute or a car wreck or a loud party, and none of the other people are. I just don't know who is going to be answering these calls for help if they keep up this pace of losing officers and losing senior officers.
Lance, I'm going to throw another element into this, and you feel free to throw it out if you don't think it's relevant. But I noticed that, you know, the mandate comes down from Biden about September 9th. And then about a month later, Merck comes out just a few days ago and says, hey, by the way, we've got an antiviral, you know, so in other words, a fairly expensive treatment, but it's a treatment if you get the disease, because we can all think of diseases that used to be a death sentence, like leukemia was almost always a death sentence. And today it's largely treatable, most of the forms. You had AIDS that was originally a death sentence in 18 months. And now today it's now you can treat that. You can probably have a long, healthy life. We may be getting to that point with COVID where you say, well, yeah, you get it, but you have very little chance of actually having a severe case. And if you do, we've got this treatment for it. That's going to change the perspective as well. As these cities are firing people, they're firing them for not taking a vaccine for a disease that they now have a new antiviral for that, you know, depending on how well it works. And it's, you know, Merck claims it works very well. That changes the whole equation, but they're still going to fire the cops. People aren't going to understand that at all, and for good reason.
You know, the bizarre thing about people who get COVID, there's people who are otherwise healthy who are dying. There are people who are elderly and have comorbidities who are surviving if they have the vaccine. So I don't know that we really have the full picture on, you know, who is going to get a worse case and who's not. Certainly, if there's a way to treat it, that's better for everyone. And we may not for years. I mean, it may be 10 years in the medical journals before people really understand the full ramifications of the virological effects of the disease. But the end result is, for whatever reason, are you going to rest and roll the dice on removing more law enforcement officers from the community?
And it sounds like the answer we're getting is yes, right?
Well, and it would seem to me from a rational perspective, and again, this is what I talk about in Blue News, law enforcement needs to tell their own story. But from a rational perspective, anything you are doing right now to remove the number of law enforcement officers in any given area is silly. Now, people thought it might have been a good idea. I'll even give them the benefit of the doubt that they were using their common sense when they did it. I don't agree, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they thought they were doing the right thing. in the several months, year that we have seen this going on, the experiment failed. It doesn't work. Just like giving bond to people who have committed violent acts. It doesn't work. So stop.
Except they're not doing. I mean, I say they. An awful lot of cities are refusing to admit that. In fact, I've seen public officials, I've seen tape of public officials saying, hold on, you know, this is not why we have a rising crime problem. And I think you take away the cops, crime goes up dramatically, but you say it's not that that caused it, it's some other mysterious cause for that. So rather than put the cops back and go back to the default position, which is we police our cities, we're going to say it's got to be some other reason. We don't want to hire the cops back.
You know, bad governance is not against the law. And, you know, it's the old, we get the government we deserve by the people we vote into office. I mean, I think that in the next year, if this keeps up, you're going to see wide swings in elections. And I think cities, you know, you have business owners, not just law enforcement officers, and their families vote too. But yep. You're going to see small business owners, I think, revolting in a lot of these cities that they can no longer do business if something doesn't change.
So what do we do in the short run as citizens? Because if we're at the mercy of those elected, and I would agree with you, bad politicians elected to office, you're stuck with them for a while. What should citizens do at this point?
The people listening to this show are the best recruiters for public safety that exist. The police chief in your community can do everything she wants. She can spend tens of thousands of dollars a month on TV ads and billboards. But people in the community locating good candidates and encouraging them to become law enforcement officers and firefighters is the best thing you can do for your community. And then stand up for them, be at the city council, be at the county saying, no, we want them to have more training. We want them to have better funding, and we want to take care of them. Because we hear about the bad stuff, but I can tell you there are several jurisdictions that have stepped up and said, not on my watch. You're not going to beat up on the cops that are patrolling the city. We're going to increase their pay. We're going to make sure they have better training. And as you saw in Florida with the governor saying, if you're not appreciated where you are, come here and we'll take care of you.
You know, I saw a very sad piece of video today from a woman, Eve Hendricks. She's in New York City. But her son was shot to death, and by her account, her son was not involved in anything criminal. He just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and becomes a victim of somebody who is a criminal who took his life. And she was begging for more cops, and she is a Black American woman living in one of the biggest cities, the big cities where they've been saying, let's get rid of the cops. And I want to call out the supposed leaders in that community in particular, because there is a racial component that's been raised by BLM and Antifa, and say, when you're the pastor of a church, when you're a civic leader and you're a Black American and you don't stand up for more cops, that I think that blood is on your hands too, because if the politicians don't get some heat for this, then they're not going to change their course, because I think they see a political advantage in it for them. Lance LaRusso is a former cop, attorney, and the author of When Cops Kill and Blue News. The money from those books goes to police charities to take care of the fallen warriors and their families that they leave behind. Lance, thanks very much. I appreciate you coming on the program. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com and vote in our Twitter poll. You can find it at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. If you don't like all the Twitter nonsense. Coming up, have our Northwest governments been feeding us fake information about the pandemic to fool us into compliance with increasingly crazy mandates? I'll tell you about the latest effort in just a moment. And it's the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. I've got a serious question for you, and then I'm going to tell you about a decision brought down by a federal judge, not about the Pacific Northwest, but it seems to apply here very, very well. But first, I'd ask you the question, have Northwest governments been feeding us fake information about the pandemic to fool us into compliance with increasingly crazy mandates? Well,
Oregon Senators Kim Thatcher and Dennis Linthicum, you've heard both of them on this show, and they're both Republicans. They have now petitioned Acting U.S. Attorney Scott Asfaug to launch a grand jury investigation into the measurement of COVID-19 stats by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Food and Drug Administration. Thatcher and Linthicum submitted the petition in a letter after gathering signatures from tens of thousands of Americans. In the petition, the senators expressed concern over the measurement and reporting of COVID-19 vaccine adverse reactions, the so-called VAERS numbers. This is where there is a database, but it's only a voluntary reporting system. So if a doctor gives the vaccine to somebody and then says, hey, we had an adverse reaction, an anaphylactic reaction or blood clots or VITT, the disease that killed that young lady from Seattle that I told you about 10 days ago, where she didn't want to take the vax. She took it because she wanted to be a room mom for her kids at her local school, and she ends up dead from a vaccine-induced fatal illness called VITT. The lawmakers say that a whistleblower under sworn testimony says the data reported under the CDC's Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, that's VAERS, may have been underreported by a factor of 5. Now, with that in mind, I've been getting lots and lots of emails, both from doctors, from nurses, from other professionals, and from their families, saying this is crazy what they're proposing to do to my son, to do to my daughter, etc. And I thought about that when I saw the news today. I mean, for example, a lot of these say, leave my name out. Lars, I have to give you credit where credit is due. The city of Eugene has said to staff, there will be no mandate until an official ruling and guidelines are given by OSHA. Remember I told you? Joe Biden announced that OSHA emergency temporary rule back on September 9th. It still has not been written as of today. And I don't mean it's not through the entire bureaucratic process. I mean the White House, which has an entire office that does nothing but track proposed changes in federal regulations, they say, we haven't seen the paperwork yet. It hasn't even started into the process, and typically OSHA rules like an ETS go into effect 6 months after it makes its way through the federal rulemaking process, which means sometime in the middle of 2022, this rule may actually be real. And I guess if this man, I'm not going to leave his name out, is right, that the city of Eugene has said, we're not following this. No mandate until the actual OSHA rule is written. He writes, I'm surprised by that stance considering the leftist source. Unfortunately, they told us, go ahead and complain all you want, but once we have a ruling, we will follow it. Our union is worthless. They will not even acknowledge members concerned about a mandate. But I'm getting a lot of other emails from people who say, listen, my kid, my son, my daughter is a professional, and they're being told do this or else. And I want to tell you, for example, this one, don't use my name. Not only will hospital staff be terminated, my daughter finally agreed to take the J&J shot as she is the sole supporter for her family. Since taking the shot, she's still working. However, she was told she will be laid off for a full month until the vaccine is fully effective. How's that for a thank you to the staff at St. Charles Healthcare System? That one covers Bend, Redmond, Prineville, and Madras. And I told you at the beginning of the show that the city of Seattle is there are about a third of the cops in the city of Seattle who have not got the vaccine. And I see all these politicians like Joe Biden, like Kate Brown, like Jay Inslee bragging. Look how many people we got to comply with this. You get to comply by putting a gun to their head and saying, if you don't do this, you're going to lose your job. You're going to lose your profession. In the case of nurses, we may take away your nursing license. Yeah, when you put a gun to somebody's head, you can usually get them to do almost anything you tell them to do when they have a gun to their head professionally. Well, get this. Just hours ago, the news broke. A federal judge has temporarily allowed healthcare workers, in this case in New York, to apply for religious exemptions to the state's COVID-19 vaccine. U.S. District Judge David Hurd made the ruling today. He granted a preliminary injunction that allows healthcare workers to apply for a religious exemption considered by their employers. But then he went on to say, the State Department of Health is barred from interfering in any way with the granting of religious exemptions going forward or with the operation of those exemptions. And you know what? He went even further than that. The actual text He wrote a 27-page ruling. He said the Department of Health is barred from taking any action, disciplinary or otherwise, against the licensure, certification, residency, admitting privileges, or other professional status or qualification of any of the plaintiffs on account of their seeking or having obtained a religious exemption. I'd say that's pretty comprehensive. He's told the state, back off, leave these people alone. And you know what we've been hearing lately. We've been hearing that Kate Brown, the governor of Oregon, and the Oregon State Nursing Board have said, you don't comply, not only are you going to get fired at your job, not only are you going to be largely unhirable in the state, but then we're going to take your license away. And if anybody thinks that's a great idea, be a naysayer. Have the guts and call me up and tell me why. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. We serve the Pacific Northwest states of Washington, Idaho, and Oregon on a daily basis with honestly provocative talk. If you want a provocative idea, you've got a bunch of liberals in big cities like Portland and Seattle that say, let's tear out a bunch of dams. That'll make it better for the fish. Now, Todd Myers has done his work at the Washington Policy Center pointing out that no, that doesn't exactly fix the problem, but it does do a lot of damage to other areas like irrigation, power production, flood control, and other things that dams provide for the Northwest. Let's not tear them out. And I've said for a long time that I think the tribes operate better hatcheries than the rest of us do because they know how to do it. And they know how to do it in a way that produces fish that actually enhance the fisheries and make sure the orcas get a meal, too. But now there's a tribe that's actually doing a great job of fixing the problem without tearing out the dams. Todd, welcome back to the program, and tell us about this tribe.
Yeah, so one of the reasons that tribes do so well is that they are accountable for the results. One of the problems with political environmentalism is that politicians make rules, but when things go badly, they don't pay the price. Tribes, on the other hand, when they create hatchery fish and other things like that, if it doesn't work, they pay the price because they don't get the fish to feed their community. And so one community, the Jamestown Sklallam tribe on the Olympic Peninsula, their rivers, the number of salmon returning has went to very low, so they looked for an alternative. And so what they've created is what's called aquaculture, and it's basically net pens that where they raise what are called black cod or sable fish, which are native to the Northwest, that they can sell for a very high price. In fact, I was at a Japanese grocer the other day, and they were selling sable fish sushi, which was a delicacy. So they have found a way to create an industry and a business that is environmentally friendly, but also serves the community. And again, they do it because it is good economically and it is environmentally friendly. And if they screw it up, they pay the price, which is very different than the normal political approach to environmental policy that we see.
Well, and one of the other things, can you speak to this, Todd? Because I know you know the subject better than I do. But over the years, I've heard about aquaculture a lot. And there are a lot of people who badmouth it, say, oh, no, then the fish get loose, they escape, and that creates other problems, not just that you lose the fish, but other environmental problems and that sort of thing. The tribes are doing it the right way and have done, shown how to do it and what, make money at it, create more fish in the ocean and in the rivers without creating any alternate or collateral damage.
That's right. And so there are a couple of things. The first is that these are not Atlantic salmon. They're not growing Atlantic salmon. They're growing black cod, which is a little bit different. Second, there is a concern about what are called sea lice, that sea lice and other pests get onto these fish. Now, in Puget Sound, the salinity is such that you just don't have that problem. People don't realize that, but that's not a problem. But third, we actually had net pens that collapsed in a storm that had Atlantic salmon, and the salmon got out a few years back. And it was argued that the huge number of Atlantic salmon going out into Puget Sound, while they may not prey on the other salmon, what they may do is eat up all of the forage, leaving nothing for the rest of the salmon. And so we, looked at it. The Department of Fish and Wildlife actually said to fishermen, if you want to go out and fish, you can catch all the Atlantic salmon you want. And they looked at the insides, and they found that they were not preying on juvenile salmon. And what's more, they found that they weren't really eating anything because they had been raised on pellets. So they also weren't eating all of the forage. And so I have asked the Department of Fish and Wildlife several times, can you show me any evidence that this the collapse of this net pan actually damaged Chinook runs, and they can't. So I think that there's a lot of hysteria. There's a lot of theories about what might happen with aquaculture. But so far, we have seen some of those things happen, and we haven't seen the concerns play out.
These are salmon that are too dumb to understand when there's no pellets coming, you know, twice a day from a guy or a gal with a bucket dropping them into the hatchery, that you just don't go out and find other food. They just swim around till they run out.
Well, they're East Coast salmon, so they're not like our smart West Coast salmon.
So, but in that case, you know, Todd, I remember when those pens collapsed, and there was a huge amount of media cover. Oh, this is going to devastate the Northwest salmon. Has there been an equally large Daily Dead Fish Wrapper Seattle Times story saying, hey, it turned out it didn't cause a problem after all?
I can't remember if they have done stories, which maybe means that they haven't. But I can tell you that, I have asked several times the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I sit on the Puget Sound Salmon Recovery Council, and our job is to try to help recover Chinook salmon. And I've asked several times, what do we know? What have we learned? And I always get sort of shrugs and you know, sort of looking at your feet, because I think that there was a lot of hysteria, as you say, and I think that hysteria hasn't borne out. And I think some of the people who sounded those alarms are now a little embarrassed that, you know, that they were a little bit hyperbolic, which is not to say that these things shouldn't be managed well and carefully. But tribes do that. Tribes have an interest in the long-term sustainability of fish runs on their own land and not impacting those fish runs, because in many cases, that's some of their food. So once you put, you know, people in charge who have skin in the game and an interest in doing it right, what you see are some very creative solutions that work, and the ability to adapt rather than just sort of rigidly stick to, you know, sort of political approaches that may not.
So what's the prospect for extending this beyond the tribes? Because since imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, say, let's do the same thing the tribes have done. If they've showed us the way to do it, then what's the chance that maybe the state of Oregon or the state of Washington could get involved in the same kind of activity without taking anything away from the tribes economically?
Well, there's sort of a federalism aspect here, which is that many tribes are sort of the laboratories of democracy, like states are supposed to be, which is that we see. You talked about hatcheries. Some of the best work being done on hatchery innovation is being done with the tribes. We did a video last year with the Colville Confederated Tribes, who are very actively managing their forests to return them to a healthy state, doing thinnings and in some case, you know, full stand replacement clear cuts because they need to start over. And in this case, the Jamestown Sklallam tribe is working with aquaculture. I think there's a lot to learn there. And because tribes have a little more political leeway, even if they don't always have regulatory leeway, there's a lot to learn from them. And we've done a series of four videos with different tribes in Washington State for precisely that reason, because they're innovative and because they have skin in the game, they do it the right way. And so we're trying to learn some of the lessons about natural resource stewardship from those tribes.
Well, I told you a long time ago that I'd heard from biologists that, you know, the standard hatchery operation is you feed the fish by somebody walking by with a big 5-gallon bucket and throwing food in, and the fish become acclimated to, oh, a shadow overhead? That means it's lunchtime. Except that out in the wild, a shadow overhead doesn't mean lunchtime. It means your lunch for some bird that scoops you up. And the tribes figure that out by saying, let's feed them not pellets, but let's feed them other things, and let's pipe it in through the water on the bottom. So they say, oh, that's where the food is. And you have fish that grow up understanding where the food actually is and where the threats are coming from as well. Todd Myers is the environmental director with the Washington Policy Center. We always appreciate his input. Coming up in a moment, are homeless camps and the problems they bring killing enough people to finally get the big cities to take some firm action? I'll give you a great example of that, well, where it's not working, coming up next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. It's a pleasure to be with you. And this segment of the show brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showing, no hassles. You pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Our Twitter poll today, would you rather have a vaccine mandate enforced or government services delivered? Now, I got an email from a young lady a couple of minutes ago who said, that doesn't sound like much of a choice. And I said, no, it's not much of a choice, but it is the choice that circumstances afford us right now. Because, for example, already today, and if you haven't heard the interview, I did an interview with a school board chair
from one community here in the Northwest that has kept its schools operating most of the last year. I mean, they have been open when other districts have been closed. It's the Prineville, the Crook County schools. They've also said that they're going to honor the vaccine mandate exemptions that have been requested by their employees. And in their case, they have just over 500 employees. They have honored over 106 vaccine exemptions. So, but for honoring those things, they would have been losing about 20% of their workforce, which is the stupid choice that has actually been embraced by big cities like Portland and Seattle, by big agencies like the State Patrol, that have said, if you don't get the jab, you got no job. And in fact, Kate Brown in Oregon has gone even further with this and said, if you don't take the jab, not only do you not have a job, but we're going to consider, the State Board of Nursing is going to consider taking away your license to be a nurse. And I can't tell you how many emails I've had from both nurses and their family members saying, what are they going to do to us? They're going to take away our license? I had one person who may not have understood the situation as well, but he said, Lars, how do they have the power to do that? And I said, well, when it comes to nurses and doctors and a lot of other professions, something like 150 or more of them in Oregon and Washington, you can't have the profession without going hat in hand to the government and saying, may I please be a plumber? May I please be a nurse? May I please braid hair for a living? I'm not exaggerating there. There are people who have to get a state license to be able to braid somebody's hair. That's how crazy we've allowed government to get. And I'm kind of hoping that beyond solving the problem that we're up against today, that we go back and take another look and say, how many of these professional licenses do we actually have to have? And I've always been told by state bureaucrats, you know, when I asked about the cosmetology licenses, things where your license either put fingernails on somebody or trim somebody's fingernails to be able to put color in somebody's hair or cut their hair or braid their hair or be able to apply makeup. They say, well, it's all about safety. You know, I think that's hogwash. And I'll tell you why. Because the state will say, to be able to be in this profession, you must have, and in the case of if you want to cut hair, color hair, braid hair, do people's fingernails and their makeup, you're talking about on the order of $30,000 in instruction and training to be able to do all three of those. 30 grand. And you say, well, why would they do that? Well, number one, it makes a lot of work for the schools that teach it. But number two, it keeps people out of the profession. Now, if you limit your competition, it would be like me, and I would never do this, but it would be like me saying, we ought to have a law in the Northwest that only Ari Hoffman, John Carlson, and Lars Larson can be talk show hosts because we know how to do it so well that you should ban everybody else from being in the profession. I would never propose that. It would go against all of my core values. But if I did that, and you said, Lars, why do you want to do that? And I said, well, between Ari and John and me, we probably got close to a century of experience, and nobody knows how to do it better than we do, which I actually think is true. Nobody knows how to do it better than we do. On the other hand, it would lock all our competition out, and you'd say, well, nobody can be a talk show host unless Lars kicks the bucket one day, and then maybe they'll open up a spot. That kind of restraint of trade is absolutely un-American. And when the government does it, and they say, well, we're keeping you safe, years ago, we talked about a young lady. I could never persuade her to come on the show, and I never understood why. She was a black woman, and she knew how to braid hair. And I'm not talking about cornrows. I mean traditional kinds of braids. She used no chemicals. She used no cutting tools. She used nothing. She just braided people's hair in a very artistic, fancy way. And she said, I want to go out and do this for a living. And the state of Oregon in that case came out and said, well, hold on a second. You have to have a license. And you have to go get, in the case of just braiding hair, about $10,000 worth of instruction. And her response was, I already know how to do this. Why are you telling me that I have to get $10,000 in instruction to be able to get a license to be able to braid people's hair? I'm not putting chemicals on their hair to change the color to whatever color of the rainbow people have these days. And I see just about every color in the rainbow out there. She said, I should be able to do this. And they said, nope, you're forbidden. And she said, okay, well, for the time being, until I can actually get this straightened out, I think she fought it in court and she lost. She said, well, maybe I'll do it as a volunteer activity. Nope, you can't do that either. If you set yourself up to provide that kind of professional service,
The government says you have to have our permission for you to do that. And there are other crazy rules. I remember a guy who called me up once, and he said, look, I'm a plumber. I said, good. We all need good plumbing. He said, my dad was a plumber. I said, even better. It's the family trade. He said, my granddad was a plumber here in the Northwest. I said, that's fantastic. He said, my son wants to be a plumber. I said, good for you. He said, he's already helping me as an assistant. I said, what's the problem? And he said, well, there's an instructional program necessary to get the state certification. And I don't know if the rules have changed since then. I suspect they have not. And I said, okay, so your son can go into the training program. And the dad said, I'm not allowed to be involved in his training. I said, what? A father can't teach a son the family's profession? And he said, nope. The state says that he has to go off and learn plumbing from someone else who may not do it the same way dad does, but dad had been doing it for decades. And he said, no, my son is required to learn the family profession from somebody who is not in the family. And I said, well, you know, I mean, the only thing about that even kind of halfway makes sense is if I say, oh, you mean because they're afraid you're going to teach him in the family profession that you've been in for three generations in your family, you're going to teach him the wrong way and that he's not going to know the right way to do it, except that he's probably also got to take other tests and everything else and show his knowledge in the profession. Dad has no incentive to teach him to do it the wrong way. The kid has no incentive to learn how to do it the wrong way. If he's proud of what dad did in his profession, that he does a good job, that he has repeat customers and all that, you'd think the kid would say, I want to learn to do it just the way dad did, plus all the modern materials like PEX and, you know, Weir's bow and all the other stuff that's come along and all the stuff not to do and how to sweat a copper pipe and all these other things you need to know. Dad was not allowed by the state to teach his kid in the family profession. And this kind of credentialism has gone way too far, where you tell people it's only good enough when the state decides it's good enough. And you know what? I wish we'd start telling state agencies who tell us things like that. Say, can you show me something the state does well? Show me all the really well-paved and well-maintained highways in your state or bridges in your state. Can you show me how well the state schools operate and what a great product they produce? Can you show me most of the things like state forests that seem to burn a whole lot more often than Weyerhaeuser forests do? Show me something. The state can't even figure out how to give away money from the employment division efficiently, and Jay Inslee can't figure out how to keep it out of the hands of Nigerian scam artists. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and you've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the program. I'm glad to admit that there are a lot of problems out there in America, most of them self-imposed crises caused by blue state governors and a president who doesn't seem to know what is actually going on most of the time. One of those problems is the border, but we're constantly getting distracted from that to other major problems around America. Mark Morgan was the acting commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection. He is now at the Heritage Foundation. I'm glad to have him come on the program. Mark, tell my audience about this. There has been a shift in where illegal aliens are coming into this country, and I don't know if there's an explanation for why it's now Yuma sector. What's special about that?
Yeah, Lars, it is. And I really appreciate you bringing light to this, because this is something we've been saying all along, especially when Del Rio happened, right? So it got a lot of attention for obvious reasons. But what we said from the beginning, let's not get too distracted with just Del Rio, because that's just a microcosm of what's happened along an entire southwest border. And so what we see, and we anticipated this, when the cartels and smuggling organizations saturate one area, and then there's some sort of pressure that's put on, like that's happened in Texas. Now, not from DHS or Secretary Mayorkas, but from the governor of Texas, Governor Abbott, and state troopers, National Guard. Well, what do the cartels do? They respond, they change their tactics, and they just shift to an area where there's less pressure, and that's part of what we're seeing with respect to the increase in Yuma, Arizona.
I mean, because the federal government may now appear to be clueless in its response on this, but the folks who do this for a living, the folks in the cartels, are not. They pay attention to what's changing, and they take advantage of the opportunities that are offered up, right?
Lars, you're absolutely right. I couldn't have said it better myself. Every single day. That's another thing we've been saying for a long time is the cartels and smuggling organization, they know the shift in our policies in the United States better than most U.S. citizens. And they watch them constantly, and they shift what we call TTPs, their techniques, tactics, and procedures. And they're constantly shifting to exploit the vulnerabilities that exist, and they're doing that along all 2,000 miles. Look, we saw it, you know, McAllen, Texas has been the epicenter, and then we saw a huge incursion in Del Rio, and now we're seeing a 2,400% increase in Yuma from this from August of 2020. So they exploit every vulnerability along all 2,000 miles of our south border.
I mean, because people hear that number, I want you to spell it out in the actual numbers. August of 2020, Yuma sector apprehends 684 illegals. Now, that's the number they caught. We don't know whether the number that actually the what's the new term?
Gotaways.
Gotaways. Yeah, I love that. Gotaways. So we don't know how many gotaways, but 684 taken into custody August of last year. What was the number in August of this year?
Over 17,000.
So it goes from 684 to 17,000. And this isn't because Border Patrol flooded the area with a whole bunch of agents and new technology and all that. You just had more people coming across.
That's right. And it's what happens is there's a series of domino effects that happen, and not in a good way. And so the 17,000, and it's like, well, how, Lars, you bring up a good point. Well, how did they do that? Well, because, look, if you come across as an unaccompanied minor or a family, which is now starting to be the majority of those that are coming across illegally, they just sit down. They just sit and wait for Border Patrol to come up and get them. And why? Why would you do that? Because they know that they're going to be released into the interior United States and then never be removed and never be heard from again. And they know that. And so
I guess Mark, right. I want to paint people a picture like this. You've got somebody who travels all this distance. They come across the border, and then they sit down and park it and get a drink of water or whatever, and they just wait. Why? You get a free ride into town. And when you get to town, probably you're going to be, if you're not just simply immediately cited and released, you'll be brought into a facility. If you're suffering from anything, they'll probably make sure you get a hot meal or some kind of meal and a bunch of water and who knows, maybe a shower and some new clothes. And then you got a free ride into town. It's like the best welcome you could expect.
Lars, how you just described is exactly what happened. I'll go further. They do get clothes. So they come in the Border Patrol. Look, there's certain sectors, entities along Southwest Border now that really rival Costco's, right? So you go in and they're provided, if they want new clothing, new sneakers, you got it. The kids, adults, they all get it. They're provided probably the best medical attention they've ever had. They get fed. And then if you're an unaccompanied minor or family, you get released immediately with families to the local communities, to the non-governmental agencies, which again, house them, feed them. And then they get them plane tickets to be flown anywhere in the United States that the illegal alien wants to go. That's the process. So under that process, who wouldn't come, Lars? And that's why they're coming. That's why we're seeing the 200,000 apprehensions, you know, month to month, back to back, and they continue to come. That's why we saw 30,000 in Del Rio. That's why there's another caravan of 60,000 coming. I mean, it's just common sense.
Well, and then if you find out on the long walk up or whatever it was, a bus ride, whatever, you get to the border and they say, hey, you come across, you're not with a family. So you say, okay, let's form up a bunch of people in a group. And in some cases, the cartels even provide the kid, sometimes a loner, sometimes a trafficked kid, which is ugly all by itself. You say, hey, we're coming in as a family. You may not even know each other from anybody, but if you come in presenting as a family, it's like knowing the secret password to get into the Magic Kingdom.
That's exactly right. And under the Trump administration, here's a fact. This isn't hyperbole. This isn't partisanship, Lars. It's a fact. Under the Trump administration, we cut that loophole out, right? So before, again, you come to the border with a family, that was your automatic passport in the United States, never be heard from again. And you're absolutely correct. Kids were being rented and bought. I'm not exaggerating. Fact, with statistics, we can back that up. They were being rented and bought to form fake families because, again, that was your way into the United States. Under the Trump administration, we shut that down. We ended catch and release. We ended that loophole. And that's why you saw the dramatic drop in illegal immigration numbers under the Trump administration. And that's why you're seeing the increase, because the Remain in Mexico program that ended that loophole, Biden turned it back on.
I'm talking to Mark Morgan. He was the acting commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Now he's at Heritage. I want you to talk about another term of art, and that's extracontinental. Now, I've heard of OTM other than Mexican, but extracontinental illegals, what are they?
So extracontinental are those countries that fit into the – it's a subset of the other than Mexican, but it's beyond the Central American countries. I'll give you an example. The Remain in Mexico program, Mexico, under the Trump administration, was accepting not just Mexicans, but they were accepting individuals from all Spanish-speaking countries with respect to the Remain in Mexico program. And then the other, you know, the large part of OTMs other than Mexican came from the Central American country. But countries outside of that, countries that really form the rest of the Western Hemisphere and, quite frankly, the rest of the world, that's what we call extracontinentals. And this is important because so far this fiscal year, the border, this is what a lot of people don't understand, Lars. They think it's just that people come from Mexico or maybe Central America. Border Patrol apprehended illegal aliens from 150 different countries. 150 different countries this fiscal year alone.
So in other words, people who have the resources to get from, and you gave the example, Uzbekistan, there are people coming from the other side who have the resources to get all the way to Mexico. And rather than say, we'll come in legally, they say, hey, it's easier. Fly into Mexico City or fly into some other Mexican city. Make your way to the border. Walk across. You're in.
That's right. And in some cases, you're seeing, and that's exactly right. That's one scenario for some of the extracontinental. Others will go to Panama, right? Others will, like right now, you saw the Haitians, right? As they're going through, and those that weren't in Brazil and Chile already, they go through what's called the Darien Gap. It's a very, very dangerous area, harsh terrain, absolutely criminal elements there. But so you will have individuals from the entire world that will either fly into Mexico, as you said, or other countries, maybe Central America countries, and then make the track, or just come by land all the way through those dangerous areas.
It makes no sense at all. That's Mark Morgan, now at the Heritage Foundation. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send emails. They all come to me, nobody else. talk@LarsLarson.com. I get a lot of naysayer calls. Not so many, or naysayer emails, I should say. I get far more naysayer emails than I ever do get calls, which is always, well, it's interesting because I guess people would rather just write it to me than actually have to answer a question or two. That's actually what makes it interesting, is we say naysayers go to the head of the line. If you want to call in, tell me why you think it's great that we have a couple of 100,000 illegal aliens coming across our border every month from June, July, August, September, and now they're expecting 400,000 illegals this month alone, all courtesy of Open Borders Joe Biden, who has created so many crises for this country, it's hard to actually keep a list of all of them. Today's Twitter poll, would you rather have a vaccine mandate enforced or government services delivered? It's a choice of one or the other. You can't have both. And now a federal judge in New York has actually stood up and said, we are not going to let you, this is to the state of New York, the judge has decided, and by the way, I don't go for sketchy sources. Sometimes people from both sides will send me sketchy sources. In this case, I'll tell you what, I'll mention the liberals' favorite television news network, the Chicken Noodle News Network, CNN, that actually has a real problem now because without Donald Trump, they're virtually dead in the water. Almost nobody watches them. But they report that a few hours ago, a federal judge has temporarily allowed healthcare workers in New York to apply for religious exemptions to the state's COVID-19 vaccine mandate. I know that for people in Oregon and Washington, that's likely to be news that's good, but not good enough, because we don't have a federal judge who said that yet to Kate Brown or to Jay Inslee or even to Brad Little. U.S. District Judge David Hurd made the ruling today, granting a preliminary injunction. Now, what that is a judge saying to the state of New York, you can't do this. And then in his decision, in which he went on for 27 pages,
He said, among other things, the state health department, quote, is barred from interfering in any way with the granting of religious exemptions from COVID-19 vaccination going forward or with the operation of exemptions already granted. And he also said in the decision, the health department of New York's case right now, I'd love to see the same thing applied in Oregon and Washington. But here's what I suggest to those people, like doctors and nurses and others and paramedics and cops. It would be worth asking your supervisor to ask his supervisor or her supervisor, are you going to follow this? If a federal judge says New York can't do it, can the state of Oregon do it? Can the state of Washington do it? Heard barred the Department of Health from taking disciplinary or other action on licensees, certifications, residency, and other professional status for those healthcare workers. This is a U.S. federal judge ruling on New York. Okay, doesn't apply to Oregon and Washington yet, but it should, because a lot of you have been wondering, as I said, I've heard from dozens and dozens of both family members and medical professionals saying, my boss says they're going to grant my religious exemption, and then they're going to constructively fire me by saying, yes, you've been given an exemption, and no, you're not going to be working a single shift or a single hour in your hospital or clinic or wherever it happens to be. You're not going to be working. You're not going to be getting a paycheck, but we're not officially firing you. Oh, and by the way, the state licensing folks, at least in the state of Oregon, there's great concern among the nurses that the state licensing board appears to be on the verge of saying, if you've been let go for refusing to get the vaccine, we're going to pull your nursing license. Now, that's now been forbidden in the state of New York, not yet here. But I'd suggest to you that it's a good idea to actually ask about that, to say, well, if a federal judge has already ruled that there, and by the way, the state of New York is, well, Kathy Hochul, who's the new, became the governor because Cuomo was corrupt and got forced out of office. She said, my responsibility as governor is to protect the people of this state. I will stand behind the mandate. I will fight this decision in court to keep New Yorkers safe. So she's fighting in court to make sure that nurses and doctors are fired from hospitals who are then going to turn around and say, we don't have enough staff to take care of you. And understand the same kind of thing is happening in Oregon. You're seeing schools that are saying we're short of teachers. So what does the state of Oregon do? Well, a year ago, they said you don't even have to be able to read, write, or count to graduate from high school. So they've taken the standards down to almost zero, as close to zero as they can get. And then comes the word that the state of Oregon has temporarily, and I wonder how long that's going to be, they have reduced the qualifications to be a substitute teacher because they are short thousands of substitute teachers. They usually have about 5,000 available. They have about 2,000 available now. So they said, let's reduce. You don't even have to have a bachelor's degree to be able to teach. Well, hold on. How insane is all of this? You're paying for schooling of your kids. Now, in Crook County schools, they've managed to keep the schools operating. So they're a good example of how to do it right. And then there are all those schools that have done it wrong. The ones that keep saying to you, I'm sorry, we can't operate. I'm sorry, we need more money. I'm sorry, we're not doing for your kids what we promised to do. Oh, and by the way, but when you're done, your kid may or may not know how to read, write, or count, but he or she will still get a diploma. And we're reducing the standards for the staff that we're hiring. And if that sounds good to you as a taxpayer or a parent or a student, I'd be glad to take that naysayer call. How's that going to work out for your kids? Just something to think about. Glad to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network, serving Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. Write in by email, talk at Lars Larson, or answer our Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.